Believ, Believ versus Ashcroft, Mr. Slivnik.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Bruce Slivnik, and I represent the petitioners in this matter, Sergei Believ and Svetlana Kuznetsova. May it please the Court. This case involves an application for an asylum. What we've got to prove in an asylum case is that the individual petitioners meet the definition of refugee under Title 8 U.S.C. Section 1101A, 42 capital A, which says that there's got to be a person that's unable or unwilling to return to their country because of persecution due to race, religion, nationality, membership in a social group, or political opinion. In this case, we're dealing with kind of a combination of religion / nationality, i.e., the petitioner, in this case, because Ms. Kuznetsova is a derivative thing, she married here, Mr. Believ, being of the Jewish nationality, felt persecuted because of that nationality in Russia. Now, the persecution, as this court has defined, there is no statutory definition of that. We are dealing with punishment or infliction of harm for political or religious or other reasons that this country does not view as legitimate. And one of the key things that I believe that the immigration judge failed to do was give appropriate deference to what this court has defined as being persecution.
And let's give you persecution just for a moment. Do you
sure.
have any recent information that Jews are often the targets of physical attacks in Russia?
Well, what we have here that is in the record was there was a report from the Bay Area, it's the BACJRR, which is the Bay Area, which was included, it's the Bay Area, give me a second here, Bay Area Council for Jewish Rescue and Renewal. During the course of the hearing,
so you have recent information, because
right,
you look online at the State Department report, specifically 99 through 2003, they don't suggest that there's a problem.
I know that those aren't,
you know, we're not supposed to take that as the absolute final word, but they certainly don't suggest that.
What we're dealing with here, though, is what his feelings were at the time. We're dealing with at the time of the hearing, within the frame of the record here.
Right. Well, were there country reports at that
there
point?
Was a country report, and as there was a country report that was supplied by the government, the immigration judge said, well, why don't you come in within 30 days? There is an outfit in Highland Park that provides additional information as to the conditions relative
right.
to Jews in Russia.
And did they come in with a report contradictory the State Department report?
Well, they went to the organization in Highland Park. The individual who does that in Highland Park was in Russia at the time. They went to the Washington D.C. office of that firm, and they said, well, why don't you contact this outfit in the San Francisco area, the Bay Area Council? And they did, in fact, present that. So they did, in fact, do that, and then the immigration judge said, no, we don't believe it because it didn't specifically mention the specific incident that the petitioner was talking about.
And specifically, what did it say, though, with respect to
that information specifically said that Jews were targeted, that Jews were subjected to physical beatings. There were article upon article upon article of persecution that Jews had been receiving in Russia at the time of that report. And that is all included in the record. And the judge just said, well, it doesn't specifically mention the specific group that you say did you, you know, persecuted you, and it doesn't specifically mention that in 1990, in August of 1990, that there was a synagogue beating. You wouldn't necessarily expect it to. But one thing that is very critical is that the State Department report itself mentioned the group that was, they do mention that there was persecution by anti-Semites, and they mentioned this Russian National Unity. The group, this RLN, happened to be the St. Petersburg version of that Russian National Union. So the group that the State Department specifically mentioned as causing problems for Jews caused problems to the petitioner here. And that is all in the record. Now, one of the key problems that I believe that the immigration judge, by the way, the Board of Immigration Appeals specifically adopted the immigration judge's opinion. So, in a sense, we're dealing with what the immigration judge said and what we're doing. He denied the credibility of Mr. Belayev. And one of the critical points that I believe that led to this was early on during the hearing, the immigration judge asked Mr. Belayev, do you have any specific documents to show, you know, that your Jewish identity? He was looking for either an internal passport or a birth certificate. And the immigration judge made a huge point out of the fact that there was nothing that was presented that was dated from 1990 on. That being the key date, because in 1991, that's when Mr. Belayev left Russia. What is not accounted for is in the record itself. If you look at appendix pages 43 and 44, there is explicitly Mr. Belayev's birth certificate from 1984, which is well prior to any time that he was looking to leave Russia. That birth certificate explicitly states that his mother was of the Jewish religion. And we're dealing with the fact that he's persecuted because he was Jewish. And the idea of the judge not believing that he was Jewish and how that they knew he was Jewish became a critical aspect as to why the credibility was, why he was not deemed credible by the immigration judge.
What did his grandfather have to do with all this?
Well, his grandfather, he lived a lot with his grandfather, with his mother. The problem here is the mother introduced him to certain Jewish traditions. This is the mother of the grandfather we're talking about. The grandfather he viewed as his spiritual leader. That he was the one who inculcated him with this pride in being Jewish. What the immigration judge did was he said, well, there's a substantial difference between saying, well, your mother introduced you to tradition, and your grandfather being your spiritual leader. That is not at all inconsistent. You're talking about the father of the person that supposedly was, that he said was the genesis of the tribe. So we're talking about the same thing. You would expect that if the mother was introducing this, and that the mother, the father of this mother, was his spiritual leader, that is in no way inconsistent. That in no way can lead to an adverse credibility finding. There's got to be some significant discrepancy or evasiveness here. This is not in any way a significant discrepancy. It doesn't bear on his credibility. You would expect that if his mother is introducing him to these traditions, she's getting it from where? She's getting it from her father. And that is to be expected. So this being a critical point as to why they're saying that he's not credible, that I think that goes to attack and show that there is, in fact, substantial evidence, that they don't meet the substantial evidence standard to have an adverse credibility finding. So, and the judge is looking at that, and I think it still goes back to the fact that he didn't present the document, because that was the first thing that the immigration judge was looking at in this case. Where are these documents before 1990? We've got them. They are in the record. Then the judge goes to, well, there are differences in dates between the beatings and some of the details. But the immigration judge made mistakes in terms of when it said this. For instance, the judge incorrectly, in its opinion, said that the incident where he was trying to protect the woman was in 1990. No. Both. The statement says it was in February of 1991, and his oral testimony, which they say he didn't, which is where they're saying there was the inconsistency, he says it was right before he left. He left in April of 91. So it being in February of 91 versus April of 91, that is a minor discrepancy or no discrepancy at all. There is no discrepancy here to create a adverse credibility finding.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Slivnik.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Fiorino?
Members of the court, I'm Paul Fiorino for the Attorney General. With respect to Judge Williams' question about what information there is in the record about from the State Department about the persecution of Jews. First, I asked the court to consider the Gromadkov case, which states that those reports are to be given lots of deference. And I would direct your attention to pages 144 and 145 of the record, where there is the extract cited by the IJ.
And so your position would be we can look at those most recent country reports and take individual notice, or
no,
we can't?
What's at issue here is what the IJ considered at the time of the hearing. Anything outside the record would our position would be fact finding that this court can't perform. With respect to the documents in the record, the petitioner has more problems than just whether or not there are certain documents in the record. There are a number of discrepancies in the record that the IJ cites that are actually there that are not available.
Talking about current country reports, we can't consider.
No, Your Honor. Because what we're reviewing is the IJ's decision at the time.
And if there
are changed conditions, it would be incumbent on the petitioner himself to file a motion to reopen before the proper fact-finding tribunal. The lack of a passport before 1994, now I may have read the appendix wrong, but I think it's on page 376 of the record. I believe that passport belongs to the female petitioner. And I think that the issue here is the male petitioner's passport. The fact that there is no birth certificate before 1990 is quite relevant, because the whole issue is whether or not this petitioner was persecuted on account of his Jewish ethnicity. And his burden is to show compelling evidence that he was not only persecuted on account of that, but that his alleged persecutors knew that he was Jewish. And that is the entire problem with his argument, because what the record tells us is that he was, for lack of a better word, picked on, beaten up by people in his neighborhood on a repeated basis because he was Jewish. But the record shows that the only evidence that anybody would have known that he was Jewish is by looking at his passport or his birth certificate. He doesn't have a Jewish surname. He doesn't go to synagogue. So he actually has a Russian surname. How would anyone know that he was Jewish except by looking at his passport? And we would submit that it's just strange credulity to think that all of these nationalist groups and these nationalists that he said attacked him in front of his home and whatnot would know that he was Jewish on that basis. There's other problems with his case. We submit that it is very relevant when there are discrepancies with respect to the origins of his interest in Judaism, because what the petitioner is saying is that he felt so strongly about his Judaism that he was influenced by first his mother and then his grandfather. We submit that such a critical and central decision in one's life, one would not be mistaken as to what was the critical moment when they decided to make that decision.
Did you have some indication, I recall in your brief, where he changed identity? His identity papers had been changed several times?
Yes, I think there was evidence in the record that he had, and I can't know off the top of my head, Your Honor, but I think that he said that he had changed his passport several times
indicating whether he was Jewish or not?
I believe so, yes. Actually, that I don't know, whether he was Jewish or not. But I know that he had had several passports changed. At least that I do know. Other problems that are in the record and that actually cast doubt on his credibility. He testified that he started receiving telephone threats from some more of these nationalists, and that these telephone threats originated with an ad that he put in a newspaper. I think it was selling a car or something like that. We would submit that how would anyone know that he's Jewish by putting a phone number in a newspaper? And the record is full of these instances where the petitioner is alleging that he was attacked for essentially for being Jewish, and every attack is accompanied by very appropriate language that seems completely tailored for an asylum claim. And we would submit that is just strange credulity that things actually happen that way. Now we do acknowledge that there is anti-Semitism in Russia, but as the State Department reports, repeated instances of attacks and physical abuse on the same person is not consistent with country conditions at the time. With that evidence, we would submit that it's incumbent on the petitioner to contradict that. When he actually submitted the report from the Bay Area Council in San Francisco, the IJ rejected it because it didn't contain any information unique to him. We would submit that the IJ was proper in doing that. Other conflicts in his testimony are very relevant, that are not minor. An incident that happened in front of his house when he alleges he was beaten up. In one instance, he says he was in the hospital for 4 days. In his testimony, he said he wasn't hospitalized at all. This is not minor. It's not trivial. It goes to the heart of his claim because it deals with the very persecution that he's alleging he experienced. We would submit that if a person is beaten so badly that they spend 4 days in the hospital, that they would be able to testify consistently about that across different hearings. So that's a credibility issue. In addition to that, the petitioner has to show not only was he completely credible to a compelling extent, but that the evidence that he submits, assuming that it's all true, compels a finding of past persecution and or a well-founded fear of future persecution. And we would submit that even on that standard, he fails to show that. Most of the attacks he experienced, if you read the record carefully, were more or less taunts against him by people in his neighborhood. And he himself admits he has a difficult time dealing with problems except with his fist. He would submit that most of the incidents that happened, he may have been taunted by people, but the verbal taunts were not persecution. The fights he got into, we would submit, were more than likely initiated by him. Subject to the court's questions, that concludes the government's argument.
Thank you, Mr. Fiorino. Mr. Slender, your time has expired, but you can have a minute if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, in terms of the State Department reports, this court has been very clear that these reports must be viewed with a healthy skepticism, because the State Department does, in fact, soft-pedal human rights violations that are with countries that it's trying to have good relations with, of which Russia would be one of them. The Bay Area Council opinion specifically gives ideas as to how Jews have been subject to physical beatings. The testimony is very clear as to physical beatings that Mr. Belayev received. He had fractured skulls. He spent 2 days in the hospital in August in 90. He spent 2 weeks in 91. The testimony relative to his hospitalization after the February 91 beating is, he said he just wasn't sure, but you would expect the written statement to be much more specific than you would an oral testimony. You would expect that. The nervousness of being before an immigration judge might cause that. And
has he considered emigrating to Israel?
Pardon?
Has he considered emigrating to Israel?
I cannot answer that, Your Honor. I really don't know.
Because any Jew can become a citizen of Israel.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Slivnik and Mr. Fiorino.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Our last case for argument.